KIUT 89.5 FM, the station that brings you music from the African diaspora with Emil Weeks.
Great Concept Radio.
A new generation of sound.
Great Concept Radio.
Thursday nights at 10. CIUT 89.5 FM. The sound of your city.
Not seeing artistic evolution. She turned.
For over 33 years, CIUT-FM has delivered the sound and the news of your city. We could not have done this without you. CIUT 89.5 is still here during these pandemic times, but we do need your financial support. Please show your support by donating now. Love your radio and visit CIUT.FM to help keep us strong and healthy. Thank you in advance from all of our volunteers and staff.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the producers and or the persons appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of CIUT-FM.
CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and of course we're broadcasting under conditions of coronavirus, and we do it as best we can. We cobble together our shows because we are proud of our audience and glad to have a great station, and I'm sure all our listeners know that at this time when we're seeing the United States once again engulfed in flames because of racial oppression, class oppression, and its failure to, the government failure to behave as a civilized leadership in a world trying to maintain civilized conduct. So that's a little thing about the station and our the fact that we're glad we can go on air. And I can remind our listeners that we will be doing fundraising soon. June 15 will be the beginning. And but it's always time, if you appreciate the shows at CIUT and alternative radio, to donate. And you can go to CIUT.FM and donate. Let's start off today with a little question from that was raised at a press conference in China. I do this because whenever anything happens in relation to China's internal affairs, for example, the U.S. and its allies saying they want to demand that China do something, and because they don't approve of the internal something going on inside China, the whole world hears the opinion of the President of the United States saying we have to know this or they have to do that. So at a press conference today, Chinese were asked a few questions. Chinese spokesperson was asked some things, and so it seems only fair that we find out what their thinking is. And the question, it was from CNN, and the last part of it says, according to a media monitoring company, some Russian, Chinese, Russian, Iranian social media accounts are active in commenting what the U.S. is experiencing. I wonder what your response. And the response of the foreign ministry spokesman is following, and has, I'll make additional comments along the way. His answer is, the remarks by Mr. O'Brien, U.S. Foreign State Department, and other U.S. officials, as well as the conclusion made by the U.S. institutions, are baseless. China does not interfere in other countries' domestic affairs. The whole world has watched as things unravel. And the U.S. politicians had better get their house in order. China has a sense of right and wrong. We're not opposed to all violent and illegal activities. We are opposed to all violent and illegal activities. We also hope that the U.S. will not stay indifferent to the issue of racial discrimination. You mentioned some people's comparison between the protests in the U.S. and the violence in Hong Kong. Their causes are completely different. During the disturbance over proposed legislative amendments in Hong Kong, hostile local and foreign forces flagrantly engaged in a secessionist, subversive, and terrorist activities that severely threaten national security, which are Hong Kong independence and violence in essence. As to the trigger for protests across the U.S., American media have made thorough coverage. Many people may want to ask this question. Why does the U.S. refer to those Hong Kong independents as black-clad rioters and black-clad rioters as heroes and fighters, but label its people protesting against racial discrimination as thugs? Why did the U.S. have so many problems with the restrained and civilized way of law enforcement by the Hong Kong police, but have no problem at all with threatening to shoot at and mobilizing the National Guard against its domestic protesters? This double standard way of behaving is so typical of the U.S. The reasons behind it are worth reflecting on and staying vigilant. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. I read this because, frankly, we're dealing with an imperialist power. It says so, pretty much. It says it's the exceptional power. It has special authority all over the world. It believes in what the Chinese call long-armed justice. And when I say the Chinese, it's probably, I would say, the majority of the General Assembly of the United Nations agree with that. They have had their doors kicked in Panama, in Nicaragua, Dominican Republic. Just throw a dart at a map and you'll find a country where the U.S. has exercised its right, its authority, because it is the most advanced and most wonderful democracy ever created, etc. There's a light on the hill, and apparently the only people who can see it are Joe Biden and Donald Trump. There's a light on the hill, and they can therefore ignore calls for equality of states and respect for treaties. They can ignore those things because they're not only the greatest democratic thing that ever happened, they're also the police, the world police. And I don't think you can emphasize enough that domestic policy in the United States is foreign policy. What you see when doors are kicked in around the world and people are bombed and dragged out and Marines go into people's homes in Iraq, Afghanistan, now they're in Syria, part of Syria, but when they, in the night with their special goggles, go and terrify people, well, that's an extension of domestic policy. America has never been able to come to grips or permitted itself. It's tried to come to grips. It is trying, actually right now, they're trying to say, when are we going to start having equality? When are we going to end racism, a racial policy, which is a negation of the concept of liberty, equality, fraternity, equal rights under the law, which means what you're looking at in the streets of America are Americans, but they are, because they are black, Latino, and you should add in with, it's also class oppression, and there's not equality at all. And What do you think will happen when you have concentration of wealth, extreme, obscene, beyond belief wealth, and with the natural opposite of poverty, and wealth wanting to command all the highways and command the air and then command the airways? What do you think is going to happen? Langston Hughes made a wonderful poem about what happens when you defer justice and put it off to another day. Now, this is the Taylor Report, and we're talking about this crisis unfolding inside the United States and linking it, talking about its link to international matters, because they are indivisible. I have an item. I think I should read a bit of it. There's two people I think it's kind of interesting to hear from that have posted their views. And let's start with the wonderful Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the basketball player. But you know, Kareem was a UCLA graduate and a really profound thinker and a fine writer, and he does have columns. You can find them at Los Angeles Times, New York Times, elsewhere. He does publish, but of course he grew up in New York City, and he was from a young age very much engaged in the last great upheaval prior to this one by Black Americans against injustice as a result of that focus point of police violence and authoritarianism. The Globe and Mail, Toronto Star, and New York Times love to talk about authoritarianism, and they, of course, mean somebody overseas, some country they don't like. But for Black American to go out onto the street is a daily potential encounter with authoritarianism, where their rights will not be respected, and they will be treated as criminals or as somebody who might commit an offense. I recall vividly the young Black man who was shot in the back years ago in California, and the police explained themselves as to what had happened. They said he was found unarmed. He had been shot in the back. He was not a criminal. It was somebody, trigger-happy police. So when they looked into it, they said, well, you know, they found some excuse. And a Black commentator said, well, of course, they suspected that even though he didn't have a gun, he might be going home to get one. Therefore, they shot him. This is remarks of that kind, humor of that type, drift to the surface because this is common, very common. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar says this: what was your first reaction when you saw the video of the white cop kneeling on George Floyd's neck while Floyd croaked, I can't breathe? If you're white, you probably muttered a horrified, oh my God, while shaking your head at the cruel injustice. If you're Black, you probably leap to your feet, cursed, maybe threw something, certainly wanted to throw something, while shouting, not blankety blank again. Then you remember the two white vigilantes accused of murdering Ahmaud Arbery as he jogged through the neighborhood, their neighborhood, in February, and how it wasn't, if it wasn't, for that video emerging a few weeks later, they would have gotten away with it. And how those Minneapolis cops claimed Floyd was resisting arrest, but a store's video showed he wasn't. And how the cop on Floyd's neck wasn't an enraged redneck stereotype, but a sworn officer who looked calm and entitled and devoid of pity, the banality of evil incarnate. Maybe you are also thinking about the Karen in Central Park who called 911, claiming the black man who asked her to leash her, put a leash on her dog, was threatening her. Or the black Yale University grad student napping in the common room of her dorm, who was reported by a white student. Because you realize it's not just a supposed black criminal who is targeted. It's a whole spectrum of black faces from Yonkers to Yale. You start to wonder if it should be all black people. By the way, this is a wonderful comment. And I'm reading from the view of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the legendary basketball player and leading black voice, and one of the great voices during this last great struggle that won the Civil Rights Act in America. And he says, he poses this comment. You start to wonder if it should be all black people who wear body cams, not the cops. I think a wonderful idea. What do you see when you see angry black protesters amassing outside police stations with raised fists? If you're white, you may be thinking, they certainly aren't social distancing. Then you notice if black faces look looting Target and you think, well, that certainly hurts their cause. Then you see the police station on fire and you wag a finger saying, that's putting the cause backward. You're not wrong, but you're not right either. The black community is used to the institutional racism inherent in education, the justice system, and jobs. And even though we do all the conventional things to raise public and political awareness, write articulate and insightful pieces in The Atlantic, explain the continued devastation on CNN, support candidates who promise change, the needle hardly budges. But COVID-19 has been slamming the consequences of all that home as we die at a significantly higher rate than whites, are the first to lose our jobs and watch helplessly as Republicans try to keep us from voting, just as the slimy underbelly of institutional racism is being exposed. It feels like hunting season is open on blacks. If there was any doubt, President Trump's recent tweet confirms the national zeitgeist as he calls protesters thugs and looters, fair game to be shot. Yes, protests often are used as an excuse for some to take advantage, just as when fans celebrate a hometown sports team championship, burn cars and destroy storefronts. I don't want to see stores looted or even buildings burn, but African Americans have been living in a burning building for many years, choking on the smoke as the flames burn closer and closer. Racism in America is like dust in the air. It seems invisible, but if you're choking on it until you let the sun in, then you see it's everywhere. As long as we keep shining that light, we have a chance of cleaning it wherever it lands, but we have to stay vigilant because it's always still in the air. So maybe the black community's main concern right now isn't whether protesters are standing 3 or 6 feet apart, or whether a few desperate souls steal some t-shirts or even set a police station on fire, but whether their sons, husbands, brothers, and fathers will be murdered by cops or wannabe cops just for going on a walk, a jog, a drive, or whether being black means sheltering at home for the rest of their lives because the racism virus infecting the country is more deadly than COVID-19. What you should see when you see black protesters in the age of Trump and coronavirus is people pushed to the edge, not because they want bars and nail salons open, but because they want to live, to breathe. Worst of all is that we are expected to justify our outraged behavior every time the cauldron bubbles over. Almost 70 years ago, Langston Hughes asked in his poem, Harlem, what happens to a dream deferred? Maybe it sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? 50 years ago, Marvin Gaye sang in Inner City Blues, make me wanna holler the way they do my life. Continuing with Kareem Jabbar, and today, despite the impassioned speeches of well-meaning leaders, white and black, they want to silence our voice, steal our breath. So what you see when you see black protesters depends on whether you're living in that burning building or watching it on TV with a bowl of corn chips in your lap, waiting for NCIS to start. What I want to see is not a rush to judgment, but a rush to justice. That's a comment of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And this is the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT. And at times like this, you really value independent radio, alternative voices, and a chance to make sure everyone is hearing these things and thinking about them. And further on the matter of that Kareem talks about and needs to be underlined is that, again, linking it to the fact that the struggle of black Americans, and we have to also add Latino Americans, what is all this stuff about caged children at the border? What is all this about differentiation, discrimination in wages, particularly in farm work in New, where the America couldn't eat if it weren't for Mexican-American, South American labor in the fields of America. America would starve, actually, without their, and yet they get the same special police treatment because it's the mind of a colonial system. It is ruled by people who call themselves Five Eyes. And Five Eyes is the joint intelligence organization of the Anglo-Saxons, the white, blue-eyed Anglo-Saxons. And that's the old British Empire. And its key members, the Five, are New Zealand. We'll have something to say about New Zealand. Australia, UK. Canada, and of course the prodigal son, the Republican part of the family, United States. They associate with each other because it's English, and they think they lead the world. Very often they say, they emphasize it. I'll repeat this point throughout. They recently issued a statement, which is poignant at this time, because let's remember that at this ugly moment of naked, blatant, wild, undisciplined violence coming from police, you've seen it, I've seen it, the world has seen it, at this time when authorities can't control their own personnel, / if they want to control their own personnel. At this time, Five Eyes thinks it's ruling the world, and it issues statements and has braggadocio about how the world has to do as it wishes. Leader of the gang is, of course, the United States. Donald Trump, and in Canada, they're in lockstep with Donald Trump. Witness the front page of our national newspaper, Globe and Mail. It says, Canada allies condemn China's security law over Hong Kong. So it was a statement issued just before all this began to really blow up in America, and the four countries issued a statement about how they were dissatisfied. Canada, UK, Australia, and US said that they were, that the international community was being wronged by the decision of the Chinese government to exercise its sovereign power and authority over the Chinese administrative region of Hong Kong, and that bad things were going to happen because the Canada and its allies, according to Globe and Mail, were going to do something. This in with the backdrop that we have of what is going on in the United States, as I want to emphasize, is something we have to appreciate and understand, and we have to put an end to it. Or it may put an end to itself, giving me now the opportunity to point out that they've lost an eye. Poor Five Eyes has lost an eye, and it's New Zealand. But the Globe and Mail didn't comment on that. Nobody's commented on that. A joint statement by the five minus New Zealand was made without any smart aleck at CBC or the Globe and Mail or the Toronto Star saying, "Well, we seem to have dropped something here. We have a little problem." No, it can't be a problem. Guess what? It's not a problem because they don't want to mention it. They couldn't get New Zealand, apparently, to sign that. You know, it's a little embarrassing. But it may be a sign of what we people are asking around the world. Is the big ship starting to list? Is it starting to have maybe a problem that they don't have a wrench for, or a button that can't be pushed? The machinery of the great system, the Anglo-Saxon system, the one that was proposed, the American Anglo-Saxon Empire, proposed by Winston Churchill loudly and clearly before the whole world after World War II, when he gave his famous speech in Missouri, the quotes, the Iron Curtain speech. Well, by the way, the curtain he was talking about was one that he intended to impose. But in the Iron Curtain speech, and go and read the whole thing, he said that the US and UK were kind of special, that they represented the highest blah blah ideals, etc. And what he meant was the British Empire, to linked with the Americans, should, of course, exercise world leadership. And Five Eyes is really an expression of Churchill's dream. And it has, in recent years, for some reason, they've just chosen to talk more about themselves. I find it's almost like the CIA, in a way, saying, well, you know, we're over here. Well, Five Eyes has been working together. As you know, they share intelligence. That is, Australians tell the Americans what they got, and the Americans tell the, when they feel like it, tell the others what they've got. And they, if one of them has a little problem, the group works on that problem together, so that any individual has a problem with one of those countries, the other countries, unbeknownst to him, are seeing how they can help out, so that they can continue their dominant position in the world. But look, one of the eyes closed, New Zealand. And I'll tell you why. It's because they may be straightened out. You can anticipate that there's going to be a meeting. The four are going to talk about the fifth, and they're going to say, we've got a problem here. And they will fix it, and I suppose they will find a way to get New Zealand to join the common statement game. But it's certainly a sign that not everybody, even in the closest quarters, might call it the family quarters, is comfortable with the direction this is taking. The worldwide aggressiveness of the U.S. And Donald Trump didn't create it. Donald Trump is just the new driver. And it's true, he doesn't have a license, he doesn't know where he's going on the road, he doesn't know reverse from forward. But they have openly and nakedly said, we'll do this to you, we'll do that to you. All these big statements about their sanctions, the ones particularly that the suck-up Canadian government always says, I, yes sir, when do you want it done? Those things are issued by a government that has no legal right, and there's no international law that permits the U.S. To try to blockade and brutalize Cuba, none at all. And there is none on Venezuela. And the U.S. had been part of an agreement with Iran, but the U.S. tore, that would be Donald, he tore that agreement up. And now he says, well, and I'm going to triple sanctions. Well, what's that got to do with Canada? Why does Canada have to obey? It's a simple, very simple answer. They have to obey because otherwise the United States would get them by the hair and shake them. They're terrified of the U.S., which is what needs, the reason I emphasize that is that when the editorial writers for the Globe and the Star write, they always say, you know, China's a bully. And the answer to that is, you say that because you're afraid of the bully. The bully is living right next door. You're terrified. And the Australians are terrified. They say what Donald wants them to say. None of them could do anything anyway. They don't have the missiles that he's got, and they don't have the nuclear weapons, and their share of the take is smaller, and there is a take, and so they just don't cross the U.S. But you see, the world is unhappy. This headline, Canada and allies condemn China, and they speak of freedom and democracy. The world isn't, they say the international community, in their statement, they say the international community, the four minus the fifth. Well, there is an international community, it's called the United Nations. Go there and take a vote, find out if the world agrees with you. They don't. You four sign an agreement, and that's the end of the numbers. Argentina didn't sign the agreement, Mexico didn't sign the agreement, Ukraine didn't sign the agreement, South Africa didn't sign the agreement, Tanzania didn't sign that. None of them agreed with you about that. You guys, you four, you signed that. And then you mentioned the international community, which, here's the embarrassing part, they didn't agree. Domestic policy is foreign policy. And you and Canada is helping with America's domestic policy. They're helping the giant, who's a little bit drunk now and a little bit off his game and not quite sure of where he's going. But Canada is trotting along beside, hoping he doesn't fall on them. Another headline missing. As we talk about this issue of Black Americans asserting their rights under the Constitution and under the law, asserting their rights and being faced with police violence, is the overarching issue of American exceptionalism, and in that exceptionalism is buried the right of a white power structure to do to anyone what it wants to do and to destroy an international community. We have the United Nations, America's a member, and there's a lot of propositions written mainly by Americans, American lawyers and politicians. They were there, wrote it all up, the international charter, the charters and agreements, that was done. So they're in violation of all that, and they've taken a big step. And I'm saying this, and this is a Taylor Report, and you're listening on CIUT 89.5 FM. They took a big step, and it hasn't been reported or talked about here. Donald Trump said last Friday, he's terminating America's membership in the World Health Organization. Why? Well, because he didn't write reports the way he wanted them written. The World Health Organization, which is part of the United Nations, acted in reacting to the outbreak, first recorded outbreak of the COVID-19 in China. Back in January, the world was notified. And the Centers for Disease Control in the United States was notified directly by the Chinese Center for Disease Control. First or third day of January, before there were cases had reached any the most dangerous kind of numbers. And they said, we have this thing and the world needs to know because we have no known treatment for it and we have no way to counter it with no vaccine. And that's what the World Health Organization is there for. And so they did their work. And Donald Trump said, China has a problem, and we don't have a problem. And the world said, well, yes, but we all have to prepare, and we all have to do what we can. And China took steps and was able to contain and cut the most vital part of the deadly threat. They were able to not only contain but eliminate, break off the chain of transmission of the virus. And once you do that, then it's simply a matter of treatment and testing. And vigilance against possible return of the virus. So the country of 1.4 billion people with a very advanced medical system was able to do this. I'm coming to Donald Trump. They were able to do it. So they kept their rate of infection down below 5,000. Incidentally, the Globe and the Star love to quibble. You want to go ahead, quibble. We're talking about under five, or how would you like the number 10? You want it, whatever you like. But they contained it. And China, and after a month and a half of vigorous, really outstanding societal response with medical professionals, they were able to reopen China, and its cities are fully functioning and its industry is back after a month and a half of vigorous effort. And World Health Organization was there on the scene, and they made reports, and they thought that was good. And they thought it was good that they had gotten early notification so that they, the World Health Organization, could do its job of telling everyone else in the world and to provide protocols on how they might deal with it. By the way, not diktat, but proposals, suggestions of how this might be handled. Well, we now know that it wasn't handled very well by the other social system, the capitalist system of the United States and Britain. They both couldn't make up their minds because they're not entirely committed to science. They're certainly not entirely committed to medical care and protection of the health of their populations, because their main thing is free enterprise. And privacy and private property, and particularly the private property of the most private and the most profitable. And so they botched it, and in the case of Britain, way over 30,000 deaths. In the United States, way now over 100,000 deaths. So what do you do when you have shown that you really don't care that much about your people? Well, you blame other people. So for some mad reason, Donald Trump decided yet he would make it, it has to become China's fault. The governor of New York said the virus that struck, COVID-19 struck New York, came from Europe. That's a fact. By the way, the virus in Ontario came from the United States. Most of the virus that is in the United States entered from the East Coast. There was some from the Pacific Coast. But it came from Europe, since China, since Trump has a little drum, little tin drum he beats, since he says, oh, I stopped the flights from China. That wasn't anything other than a peculiar, irrational step. Didn't protect anybody, because the protection has to come from a public health service system where you immediately identify those who have it and isolate them, and then search out those they've been in contact with, as was done in China. It was done in China, Donald. That's where it happens. And I'm sorry that Trudeau, and I'm sorry that the Globe and the Star have all got an editorial problem, but actually the Chinese did an outstanding job. I know they want to talk about anybody else, in fact, I mean, it's true that South Korea, Vietnam, and others, that they did things. But and people, pardon the door closing, as you're getting live work done out of my office. My point is that they're trying to avoid something I think has to be said loud and clear now, because I'm tired of the baloney. I'm tired of everybody doing a little song and dance about, you know, oh, we have two powers. No, you have one country trying to defend itself and account for itself against lies, slander, and racism. And so the fact is that, yes, the Chinese did an outstanding job. And they did an outstanding job of being loyal to other countries and saying we're on one planet together, it is one humanity. They have done a tremendous amount in Africa. A tremendous amount in fighting the COVID-19. Who says so? The leaders of the African countries that received the help. The leaders of the African countries that received the help. And by the way, reached out themselves to help the Chinese. Just so Donald knows this. Here's the difference. Here's the reason it's a psychological element in this. Imperialists don't like to say anybody helped them, because they are so tough and rough and smart. They don't really need a lot of it. They don't want to hear from anybody, even New Zealand. They know what they're doing. And therefore, they're not into this thing of my African friend and my South American friend. No, that's not their game. Their game is, we're the boss, and we know what's best. And you can come and thank us, but we're the boss. Well, that isn't the approach, actually, of China. It's not the approach of Vietnam. Vietnam did do an outstanding job. And there is a gentleman from Vietnam, his name Ho Chi Minh. He attended a conference in 1924, and he wrote about the conference. It was titled National and Colonial Question. And in 1924, he wrote, it is well known that the black race is the most oppressed and the most exploited of the human family. It is well known that the spread of capitalism and the discovery of the New World had as an immediate result the rebirth of slavery. What everyone does not perhaps know is that after 65 years of so-called emancipation, American Negroes still endure atrocious moral and material sufferings, of which the most cruel and horrible is the custom of lynching. Ho Chi Minh, 1924. Guess what, Washington? The world has been watching for quite a while now. 1924, a guy named Ho Chi Minh, you remember him. He led his people in a struggle against French colonialism and then U.S. imperialism, won both times. There's now one Vietnam. And maybe it's because he was successful, because in 1924, as a young man and poet and communist revolutionary, actually, he pretty much understood the world. He kind of, you know, you got to understand where you are if you're going to succeed. And he showed that grasp. I want to point out that in that comment of his, I was quoting Ho Chi Minh, he used the term American Negroes. So 30, 40 years later, there was a great upheaval and revolutionary act by black Americans, and the word Negro went into history, disappeared, because one of the things that was achieved by that struggle was to exercise the power to name themselves, to take away the term Negro, which was, of course, came only out of the offices of white people who had chosen to use that word. So part of the struggle that won the Civil Rights Act in 1964 was equality, the equality before the law, equality, the equal right to a job, equal right to a house, the protection of the right to vote, all those things were re-won 100 years following emancipation, the ending of slavery, and by edict in 1863 and then ratified in 1865. All those rights had to be re-won, and along the way in the process, the word Negro was also overcome. And among the people who outfits who didn't want to change, didn't want to give up that word, was the New York Times. It wasn't an easy victory. It took a while for that to be achieved. And those struggles lead us, from the 60s, lead us towards something which should be said right now, and that was affirmative action. This crime against black Americans had to be recognized, and it had to be corrected. A way to do it is affirmative action, acknowledgement of the crime and correction of it. It needed affirmative action. That has disappeared from the vocabulary of the Democratic and Republican parties, who are the knee that the policeman is putting on the throat of African Americans. That's the knee that's on the throat of black Americans, is the Democratic and Republican parties, who will not act, never show any leadership, because they're invested in holding on to power and having their way and saying everything has to go through them. This is where we have to say to the Canadian government and to anybody who claims to represent the people in this order, and after all, America is part of the Great Alliance, their pals, special pals, is that, yeah, we have a problem with people who are not pro-democracy. And those people are in Washington. And you want to write about how somebody should provide democracy, the way the Globe writes about Hong Kong, which is none of their damn business. They should apply it to the American people, and particularly the oppressed black and Latino people who do not enjoy democracy, who have their votes taken away from them, their rights taken away from them, and they experience brutalization. That has to be corrected. You know, it was in the Bible, I'm trying to remember which one. I want to say Luke, but it is clearly stated, before you look over the fence at the moat in your neighbor's eye, you look into your own eye first. Examine yourself. And this is domestic policy, is foreign policy. And U.S. has a vicious, wicked foreign policy. Vicious. And now they're trying to get the gang together and to see if they can create havoc in Asia, where it's none of their business. And Canada is hopping along beside the boss. And they want to talk about things like Taiwan, which again is not Canada's business at all. Or they want to say, well, we have a duty. Here's where Canada's colonial brain, because it is a colonial power, part of the colonial system. They say, well, you know, we have responsibilities there in Hong Kong. No, you don't. You have only one kind of responsibility. Here's the responsibility that we have. And this would be true if you're talking about France. It'd be true if you're talking about Portugal or Spain. Any country you want to name, your duty as a Canadian government is to say to Canadians that the law of Hong Kong is the responsibility of China. Yes, under the one nation, two systems. That's the name of it. It's the responsibility of China. And any Canadian who is in Hong Kong or Taiwan or China has to obey the laws of that country. That is a fundamental thing. Just say it. Acknowledge it. That's a fact. They have laws. They have sovereignty. So if a Canadian goes abroad and enters any country, they are to be advised, if they need telling, you're not under Canadian law now. You are under the laws of that country. If you don't like the laws of that country, do not enter it, because that's their business. That is their business. When we respect that, the country of China is a member of the United Nations, a member of the Security Council. It is a major economic power. We do business with it. It has been hugely beneficial to Canada. And the way Canada could help would be to say, people have a right to demonstrate, and the laws of China say they do, and no one in China has said that they don't have the right to demonstrate. But every country has laws governing how people conduct themselves, and those laws have to be obeyed while enjoying the rights that are provided. If they would say that, calm would be restored. But actually, there are NGOs functioning, NGOs, and somebody said in modern NGOs, particularly National Endowment for Democracy, is an operation that was formerly conducted by the CIA, but since the demise of the Soviet Union, they decided to come out from under their rock and walk around in public. But they finance and help people who want to cause problems in the domestic affairs of foreign countries, and in this case, we're talking about China. So those organizations, China has a right to ask about and do something about, just as Canada would if there was a Chinese human rights organization in northern Manitoba having meetings and providing money to an indigenous group and urging them to go and protest and to demand independence. Canada would be a little sensitive, you know, a little sensitive to that. So they can't play dumb, as though they don't understand what the stakes are. Though there wouldn't be very many demonstrations, in my opinion, in Hong Kong if they weren't able to say, we have a big friend. Some of these guys are actually permitted to fly to Washington and shake hands with American senators who are reactionaries trying to crush Cuba, Venezuela, and anybody else with a boot. And the representatives of the Hong Kong crowd, the demonstrators, say, oh, I like this senator, and he's my friend. He likes the fact that I wave an American flag in Hong Kong. He likes the fact that I wave the nationalist flag of Chiang Kai-shek in Hong Kong, and I sing God Save the Queen. Well, you know, if the senator were to say to that gentleman, actually, you have to obey the laws, that would be the end of it, frankly. That'd be the end of it. Canada wants to know why it's in a problem with, they say, oh, China's bullying us. No, no, the bully told you, Canada, to arrest a Chinese businesswoman whose company, Huawei, had brought jobs and investment and all kinds of wonderful opportunities to become a more advanced country, her company. Donald Trump doesn't like the company. So he decided to personalize it and have an executive of that company arrested, and when in doing so, knew that if Canada obeyed his edict to take her into custody when she had not broken any Canadian law and was only transiting through Canada, Donald Trump knew and Trudeau knew that that's going to be the end of the road for the Huawei business, and that Canada is going to suffer. Not from reaction other than China realizing that this is not a country that you can trust and do business with, because apparently one phone call from Washington will cause them to do outrageous things. I've said it on this program, the Taylor Report, that most countries of the world wouldn't have obeyed that order. They would have said, well, no, no, no. Hey, listen, you're asking us to arrest a business executive who's not broken any Canadian law and who's only transiting? You realize, do you not, my friend, that you're going to cause havoc for Canada? They said, yeah, we know. Pick her up. Okay. And then Canada says, oh, golly, why is China so mad? Well, because you don't even have a government. You have people who take those calls and do the dirty work. That's kind of simple, isn't it? It's plain as the nose on your face. That's why, of course, you turn away from the bully and become the bully's pal. And you know, one of the most despicable characters on the earth and anybody's ever seen bullies is the guy who runs along with him and use any be small, and as the leader of the Bloc Québécois says, actually has small biceps, and parades and shakes his fist at the other person that the bully doesn't like, because we're with the bully. Well, there are consequences of that. And yeah, we're a free country, and the way you can prove Canada is free and democratic and equal is that we do everything Washington wants us to do, from the NDP, through the Bloc, through the Liberal Party, through the Conservative Party, and yeah, the Green Party too. All of them. We put our knee on the neck of the African American because we're with him. We're with Donald. And when he says jump, we jump. We don't even have the makings to become a New Zealand. And maybe, well, let's pray for New Zealand. This is the Taylor Report, and I have to say that I'm very sorry to tell listeners that my daughter and our beloved member of the family, Karina Taylor, who worked so hard to help make my program go and was such a great working companion, has died. And we're sorry and we grieve. And we'll see you next week.